Hey there, all you guys and gals, hip cats, cool kittens, you diesel-powered disciples of cool. This is the Diesel-Powered Podcast, the voice of Diesel Punk, and we are coming to you live tonight through the magic of the interwebs. I am the artist also known as the King of Swing, the Tower of Power, Big Daddy Cool, John Pica. You can call me Johnny. And joining me once again from the Dallas-Fort Worth compound is the boss, Larry Amiet.
Hey, everybody. It's good to be here.
And from Memphis, Tennessee, that daring darling of the skies, Daisy O'Dare.
What's buzzing, cousin?
And from the frozen tundra of northeastern United States, the deacon, Eric Render King Fisk.
Just when you thought it was safe to step outside wearing your fedora, it's the Diesel Power Podcast. No one is safe.
Oh, you know what? I think we need to use that as a drop. Definitely, definitely.
Tagline.
Well, guys and gals, we are all back together again. Together at last.
Reunited.
Together forever. We're tying a knot. Nobody can sever. Who can tell me what that's from?
I was going to say it. Anyone? It's reminiscent of Cole Porter, but that's all I can say.
It should make you think of Cole Porter. It's not, but it was intentionally written to make you think of that era.
Jeez.
Nobody? I thought for sure, Daisy, you would get it.
Sadly, I did not.
If I sang the marquee song, you would get it.
Oh,
the
I'm
sun
sure.
Will come out tomorrow.
Yes. I have tomorrow. Not seen that. I haven't seen that since I was like 10 years old, so I don't remember all the songs, but I got you now.
You know what? Here's the really funny thing. My wife just did a production of Annie at her school. She directed it, and my daughter was one of the lead characters, so it's fresh in my mind. We just saw it this weekend, but of course, Annie, the musical, based on the Diesel-era comic strip, Little Orphan Annie. And the musical is set in the mid-1940s, and President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, is one of the characters, and you know, at the kind of height of World War II. And I've been in that show twice myself. I've played Daddy Warbucks, and I played Rooster Hannigan. So
hold on.
Any kind of weekend here at the cool.
Here's a question: which character do you like more, and which one is more fun to play? I expect two different answers.
You know what? Here's what's really funny. So the kid who played Warbucks this weekend, he said, "Hey, I heard you played Warbucks," and I said, "Yeah," and I played Rooster too. He says, "Well, which one did you like the best?" You know, I don't know that I have one that I like the best. Maybe that's a lie. But he asked me how I was able to play two completely different characters. And the answer is really easy. Because really, truly, there's a piece of those characters inside me. Both of those characters live inside me. You know, I am the freewheeling, risk-taking, a little bit shady scoundrel, and I'm the hard-nosed conservative at the same time. So, you know, I can channel either one at any time. But pure fun, Rooster Hannigan, without a doubt. Yeah, I think that one's my favorite.
I think that's an amazing thing to think about. So yeah.
Yeah, So speaking of Diesel era musicals, all right, guys, we're going to start the show off with some big, big news. I got a big announcement for the cast of the Diesel Powered Podcast. They have not heard this news yet. So you guys are hearing it along with our audience for the very first time. And this is, in the words of our president, huge. Mrs. Cool deigned it necessary because we buy so much from Amazon to go ahead and do Amazon Prime.
All right.
So,
hey,
guess what Johnny started today?
Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, I got to start the first episode of Man in the High Castle. Now, I didn't get very far because it was interrupted by my son's need to watch the next couple of episodes of Iron Fist. And we're kind of in the middle of that.
Yeah.
Loving it. Loving it. It's been a great series. He likes it better than Daredevil and Luke Cage. But the point is, I'm going to get to see Man in the High Castle. Finally, after all this time, I will be able to join the Larry and Eric Club and be able to talk about it on a deeper level with our listeners. I think that's pretty exciting.
I
that is fantastic.
You know what? It's better than what I thought that you were going to tell us. I thought you were going to give us some other news, and this is far bigger than anything I could possibly imagine. I mean,
oh gee, I missed it.
Oh no, but folks, we had a little audio problem. Some of the gremlins kicked in for a while there. Johnny, you want to fill Daisy in on the good news?
Yeah, Daisy, we got Amazon Prime, so I'm going to be able to see Man in the High Castle.
Ooh,
everybody nice.
I just
that
dropped much. Something while I was saying that and tried to catch it at the same time, and my juggling skills failed me right then. Man in the High Castle.
Now we got to get Daisy on it.
Yeah.
Daisy's the last one.
Yeah.
If there was a way that I could gift Daisy two seasons of Man in the High Castle, I would do it. I mean, it's one of those shows, whereas it's amazing how, with everything that is going on right now, it is amazing how irrelevant it is to the conversation that America is having with itself, like a schizophrenic, dysfunctional family.
All right, so you're right, Eric. And I'm about to shock Larry because I did start the first episode. And first of all, the opening sequence, the opening credits is absolutely spine-tingling, haunting with the Edelweiss and all of the imagery. But then if you guys remember, that first episode opens with basically a feel good, bolster the patriotic mood commercial / speech by a nameless, faceless politician.
Right.
But I found it quietly discomforting that when did this first episode come out? 2 years ago? 3 years ago?
I think it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, that the commercial ended with America's best days are in front of us. We will make America great again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Creepy, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, yeah. It was, yeah. All of a sudden, I understand some of Larry's Facebook posts.
Yeah. Anyway,
it was a little bit, had to take a step back for a minute. It was a little bit, little bit odd, but
I will.
We are not here to talk politics.
Yes, thank you.
We're talking the politics of Decopunk.
Yeah, there we go.
So, what a segue.
That's why we got Eric around, because you know he keeps us sounding professional and like we know what we're doing. So Eric is referencing, for our listeners, an article that he reposted, which I guess came out some time ago, but I had not seen it until you posted it, Eric. First, you referenced it on the Fedora Chronicles and then shared it around Facebook a little bit. And I picked up on it and shared it around on our site and on Dieselpunk's HQ. And basically, Barnes & Noble officially used the term DecoPunk in one of their articles talking about some recent releases. The most recent release on the list was Amber Lowe by Laura Elena Donnelly, which I just picked up.
I'd love to read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just picked it up last week, as a matter of fact. I haven't dug into it yet, but you know, I saw it at Barnes & Noble. I saw the cover, and I was like, ooh. I read the jacket description, and I was like, oh, I got to have this. This is right up my alley. And it is, you know, described as an alternate universe, Art Deco, Jazz Age universe. So what we would consider the hopeful Autizian Deco Punk wing of Diesel Punk. But Barnes & Noble, the article headline read, Deco Punk, I think it said Deco Punk deserves to be bigger than steampunk.
Mm-hmm.
Was that basically the jive mm-hmm. of it?
Well, yeah. you can goose the grammar of it or the verbiage of it any way you want. But the thing is that the thrust of the article is it's sort of like a kind of clickbait-ish the title. It's sensational. And it does right. it asks a question, or it declares Deco Punk deserves to be bigger than steampunk. And of course, this is where people's heads exploded all over Facebook.
Yes. They did.
I will let you finish this, and then I got to give you my 3 cents.
Well, and you know, I read the article, and of course, I'm reading it from the bias of agreeing with it, right? Because we, all of us on this show, we love Diesel Punk, and we consider Deco Punk a subgenre of Diesel. And so I read the article thinking, yeah, absolutely. This is what we want. And I was thrilled that Barnes & Noble, and this is kind of the crux of why I bring this up, because last episode we were talking about how crucial it is that we start to get publishers and production companies, studios and whatnot, to start using the term Diesel Punk.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got I launched the change.org petition to have Wonder Woman officially labeled as Diesel Punk. And if you guys listening haven't signed that, go sign it. It's two clicks of a mouse. We need a bunch of signatures. But, you know, the point is, we just talked about this needing to happen last episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so here we see this article. And although Barnes & Noble is not using the term Diesel Punk, they are using the term Deco Punk, which is a huge step in the right direction. Now, Larry, I know you've got a problem with this, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. But I feel like just them using the term in that article was a huge win for us. And I'm going to set that's the table I'm going to set for you guys. Larry, go.
Well, okay. One, it wasn't Barnes & Noble per se using the term Deco Punk. It was one author who writes a variety of online reviews and opinions for Barnes & Noble. Sam Reeder, he goes by. I suspect that's a pen name. And he has his own blog, something called the Geek Initiative, something like I believe it's called. If you got a chance to read the commentaries, all the various comments people made, I mean, it was really supportive that this is Diesel Punk.
Mm.
It was really loaded with some very strong opinions. One says in exclamation point, "How about just using the established term Diesel Punk?"
I was one of those comments, Larry. I posted one.
Well, good. You were one, and there was many others.
Yeah.
So it was really nice to see all these other individuals jumping in saying, yeah, this is Dieselpunk, which was really quite cool. I wrote a blog post where I said that Decopunk is just a thin slice of Diesel. I still stand by that. It was interesting that one of the books that they threw in there in their article actually was discussed and was promoted as being Dieselpunk, the new Bruce Sterling novel, Pirate Utopia. I first learned about it because I got a Google News alert under the term Dieselpunk. So the Pirate Utopia is already appearing as a Dieselpunk novel. So it's out there. I think there's going to be a little bit of a, maybe we're going into a kind of a neat time when there's going to be some tension between the terms Decopunk and Dieselpunk. I think Dieselpunk, the term, is going to come out on top. But I think we're seeing a beginning of a very intriguing period where there's going to be some debate about this concept of where to put the 20s, especially the 20s, 30s, and 40s in the whole genre punk scenario. And that's going to generate, you know what that's going to mean? More books, movies, material. I think it's good. I think it's a good conversation. I think Dieselpunk's going to win as a term, but that's my bias.
Yeah. Eric, Daisy?
I really want to hear Daisy's thoughts on this before I jump in.
Well, with Decopunk being pretty much my favorite subset of Dieselpunk, you know, my favorite style is Decopunk. I was pleased as punch to read that title. So I think this could do Dieselpunk and Decopunk a lot of good because it's starting to get the aesthetic and the term out there a little more. And I hope that people do start using the Dieselpunk term to describe books and movies and things like that, because that the punk thing is already there. People know what's a lot of people know what steampunk is. So if they'll be able to jump off of that definition and be like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So this is another kind of punk.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm all for it. I love deco punk.
Yeah. Interesting. Eric.
Well, let me just take a couple of steps backwards. One of the reasons why I actually found that article is because I wrote a different article along the same lines. And I wrote this article. I'm sure that everybody's heard about it by now. Requiem for Steampunk. And I presented this argument. I presented this argument to the community.
And by the way, Eric, I almost got kicked off as a steampunk group for reposting it. Just so you know.
Either I'm sorry or you're welcome. I'm not sure which. And the thing is that one of the things that I said, and I'm telling you, I stand by this. I'm not sure that I'm quite crazy about the approach that I took. It was exactly what I needed to write when I wrote it. And my entire thing is that maybe steampunk needs to change its name because it has lost its anti-authoritarian, anti-establishment vibe to it. I believe it. I honestly believe that it's lost its original edge. And John, you coined the phrase cogsplay. And I think that fits more to what we're seeing right now, because we are starting to see this authoritarian movement within steampunk, with people who are the ones who are taking charge and saying this is and this isn't steampunk. And this also gets into another series of articles or arguments elsewhere about what is the definition of steampunk. And there are people who have proven to me that that steampunk still exists as a punk subset genre, where people are fighting an authority figure. This time it's me, because I presented this opinion. Bang, there's my opinion. Let's go. But there's so many people out there. And one of our friends had agreed and had mentioned, Andrew had said, that there are a lot of people who have these arbitrary rules or are very strict adherent to their rules that they're keeping to themselves so that they can divine for others what is or was it what isn't, quote, steampunk, unquote. And so there's this huge issue going on within the steampunk community. And look, it's winter. A lot of people aren't able to work on their projects in their cold basements. So what else are we going to do besides argue about the definition of steampunk until, you know, our basements thaws and we can get back to our craft? But I when I found this, it was like it was a eureka moment. Why decopunk deserves to be. And a lot of people had said that steampunk is like it's an underground movement, because there are somebody came forward and said to me after reading my piece, he said he can't go to work on casual Fridays and wear his Edwardian clothes because that's a fireable offense. That's a cause for dismissal, but yet you can show up wearing your entire Patriots apparel the day after they won the Super Bowl. That's socially acceptable, but you're not allowed to wear an Edwardian vest and a cravat. I don't understand. So that's where that came from. I have my answer as to why decopunk deserves to be bigger than steampunk, and I know it's going to cause some arguments and some fights. But the author didn't answer that question that I think that was posed in the title of the article.
Well, and a lot of people have pointed that out. And, and with both your original Requiem for Steampunk, you know, there has been a lot of people who lost their minds about that. Because they didn't understand the take that you were taking. But, you know, as the conversations got deeper and deeper, more and more people, whether they intended to or not, ended up agreeing with you in a roundabout way. And the general consensus I got from the steampunks that I interacted with was, you're right, there is no punk in steampunk anymore, but that's okay. We're still going to call it that, but yeah, it has morphed. It is something different, and you know, we're okay with that. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Eric and I talked about this before he posted his article, his blog. There used to be a punk component to steampunk. It was very popular. It was very in the Northwest, in the Washington State, Oregon area. The Seattle steampunks were very much involved in syndicalist, progressive, leftist type of rebelliousness. Steampunk magazine, I recall when that used to be published. That was kind of like that anarchist wing of steampunk. And they have pretty much faded. Now steampunk means something altogether separate. Punk means science fiction in the steampunk community. Steam is Victorian, punk is science fiction. And it's pretty mild. Will steampunk survive? I think it will. I don't think it's ever going to be what it was for a while there. People have moved on to the new phase. Bad. I like to think they're going to move on to us, but...
Well, I think they kind of are, Larry, and I think that is really what the intention of that article on Barnes & Noble was. And look, whether it was written by, you know, Barnes & Noble or not, it was published by Barnes & Noble. And just by them publishing it and using that term officially on their website, I think is just huge.
I wonder if we can get the author on our show. You know, I found her. She's at that website. It's a she, Sam Reeder. There's a photo of her there. I wonder, let's see what we can do about if we can get her on the podcast. I'd love to know more where she thought she was going with that article, and just pick her brains. And she seems like very intelligent, very interesting person.
And she picked out some great books to highlight.
She did.
Yeah, now they're on my reading list. So at least the thing is that she alerted us to books that we should have on our reading list. She did her job that way.
She mentioned Empire State by Adam Christopher, and that's the image that is the masthead image for the article. And I reviewed that a year or two ago here on the podcast. Great, great novel by Adam Christopher, and he's got a follow-up, Made to Kill, which are great books. And so she picked out some great titles. And, you know, I thought it was really timely that we have been having this discussion. And I think, Eric, you know, your question or Larry, your comment that, you know, is steampunk fading somewhat? Are they moving on to something else? And is it going to be diesel? I think so. Because I think what the foundation of the fans of steampunk is today. Let's not talk about foundations of the genre. Let's talk about what is morphed into today. I think overall that the base love is that retrofuturism, that retrofuturist aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And diesel punk lends itself even more to that because we have such a technologically advanced era where the greatest weapons of war, the greatest inventions of the 20th century were created in the diesel era. I mean, the vehicles, the inventions that really changed the world were invented in the diesel era and came to common use in the diesel era.
Tell you what, I look forward to the idea of this of steampunks coming in, and they are really a creative group of individuals. Yes. I've seen some amazing cosplay come out of steampunks, and says amazing steampunk technology. They're makers or something else. To bring that creativity into the diesel punk community, I think that would be fantastic, and I do hope that they start migrating and taking interest in us.
Well, and what makes me think that is happening as we speak, and Daisy, I know you're mm-hmm. very active in a steampunk community in Memphis with the Clockwork Mechanalists.
Well, I mean, what there is of one.
And there's my point.
Yeah.
In the last year, you know, I've attended between 15 and 20 Comic Cons, pop culture cons. And whereas in the previous years, there would always be a huge steampunk contingent in the cosplay community. You would see steampunks on the floor. You know, they'd have booths set up, fan booths. In the last year, in the last 9 months in particular, I've seen a total of 3 steampunk cosplayers at conventions. I've seen a lot of Agent Carter cosplayers. I've seen a lot of World War II Captain America cosplayers. I've seen a lot of Hydra and Red Skull cosplayers. I've seen a lot, especially over the last 6 months, a lot of movie Wonder Woman cosplayers. I've seen a lot of Warhammer cosplayers, but steampunk cosplayers, I've seen three in the last 9 months.
You know, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be the engine ain't running so good no more.
I think it's amazing how it's like, first of all, it's amazing that you have made that observation, and that and you've mentioned that, and you have said, hey, listen, I mean, and these are your own anecdotal examples that you shared with us. And isn't it funny how people dismiss anecdotal evidence when it goes against one of their core beliefs or philosophies? Isn't that funny how that works? For me, it was like so many people have sort of piled on because I wrote something controversial, and the woman who wrote this article and I, we have something in common. We came up with a cool name for an article, and then we hit the ground running. And the thing is that it's like, and I had said, I made these points, 1 through 12. I made these points in these paragraphs. And then you read the responses of the people who obviously didn't read that Barnes & Noble article, but they posted on it anyway. And I think I have 6 or 7 of comments in my article that's still on the front page of the Photo Chronicles. And the thing is that there's so many people who all they read is steampunk is dying. And then they go out and they bend over backwards to prove me wrong, but yet make my point for me. Because it's not, you have these people who are saying, you need to go and listen to Celebrity X, who is the authority. As soon as somebody claims that they're an authority, and everybody agrees this person, wasn't the whole thing about the punk movement, not to beat a dead horse, but wasn't the whole thing about the punk movement to be anti-authoritarian?
Punk authority, those two words don't go together.
It's like jumbo shrimp, you know. It's
right.
It's a contradiction in terms. And, yeah. And the thing is that it's like, I mean, and the thing is that in an earlier iteration, I mentioned a couple of people by name in some other arguments. And then to have somebody who's a friend or a fan of that person, you better watch what you say, because that person's very litigious, and that person will send you a cease and desist order. And it's like, I mentioned somebody, has anybody ever gotten a cease and desist letter from this person? And then three people like responded to me via private email. Don't tell anybody I told you so, but I got one of her just a cease and desist letters. I mean, it is like there's a secret little band of people who've been burned by this authority figure. But there's no authority figures. But there are people who, as soon as lawyers get involved, it's not a punk movement anymore. It's not anti-establishment. Yes. You bring a lawyer to a fight, it's no longer, it's not anti-authoritarian, it's not anti-establishment, you're bringing in the establishment.
Well, and I know the individual that you're talking about, and I think all of us on the show do, and what I can't figure out, though, is what does she have to make people cease and desist about?
Individual? Is it a guy that sent this letter, Eric?
No, it's a blonde, very tall, leggy, waif-like model.
Oh, okay.
If you feel like saying
someone else, okay.
Because the thing is, I've already been warned not to mention her name, by people who claim to be part of her organization.
Because there's a guy that kind of has been claiming to be the father of steampunk and own all the rights to it. It's been going around pulling that stuff for years.
Yeah, and people have mentioned his name as well, but not to the same extent as this woman. I mean, listen, okay, I appreciate everything that she's done, but if I flash my private parts in deco punk soft porn, does that make me the authority of diesel punk or deco punk? I don't think so. And to encourage other, because as soon as like you start making it into, as soon as you decide that you want to be the Bob Guccione or the Hugh Hefner or the Larry Flint of steampunk, and you're telling people to not do it that way, do it my way, your argument's done. You've settled the argument for me. And it was just what. I don't know if that's getting off the track here or not, but I do feel as if I have been burned by this argument to some extent, and I'm not afraid to put my hand in the flame anymore because
after a while, if you burn off enough of the flesh, you stop feeling the pain. here's the thing though, and this is kind of where. I obviously don't want to create controversy or make people upset, even though just by us having this discussion, we'll probably get some letters, and we'll probably get, a letter from the persons whose name begins with a K and ends with an O. But, the whole thing comes down to, are we as a genre moving forward, and what is going to propel us forward? And I think this Barnes & Noble article was a step in the right direction. Now, when we're talking about anecdotal evidence, Eric,
mm-hmm.
I mentioned that in one of the responses to my posting your article. And, I just posted, hey, this is an interesting article by a very good friend of mine. Take a look and tell me what you think. And, people lost their minds. And I mentioned that, hey, in the last 9 months, I've seen exactly 3 steampunk cosplayers. And actually, at the time that I posted it, it was 1. This past weekend, there were 2. At the Doctor Who Con in Clarksville. But prior to that, in the last 9 months, I saw exactly 1 steampunk slave Leia. And that was it. And so one of the people replied back, well, that may be true, but if you go to some of the other conventions like Wild Wild West Con, which just happened a couple of weeks ago, it sure doesn't look like the genre is dying to me. And, I wonder, is it fair for the defenders of a genre to point to their own bubble and not look outside of it? You know what I'm saying?
Let me play devil's advocate a little bit on that. We've been accused of that. We've been accused of that ourselves. I'm not too sure. I think Eric's point is stronger than is it dying, as has it lost its character? Sure. When it's lost its punk edge. I think it's still around. I mean, Wild West Con, that's a great example. So, but, I mean, has the glory days of steampunk passed by? I don't know. I'd say don't start nailing nails in its coffin quite yet. I think there may be still some life to that beast. But is it still steampunk? Like I said, punk seems to be now synonymous with sci-fi. And I think that, to me, is the biggest issue. Is it dying? I don't know. I'm not part of the steampunk scene. And I don't know about you, Johnny, but I don't care if it lives or dies. Okay? Not to be ugly. It's just not my gig.
Well, I'm with you on that. But what I hope that you know, we, as we talk through this, what I hope that those people, as they kind of fade away from that genre, I kind of hope they cross over to our side, and not that we have a side, but they make the evolution.
Yeah, we have cookies.
Yeah, we do. Cookies. Hey, Nabisco became huge in the diesel era. But here's a teaser, guys. So, she couldn't be on tonight, but I'm going to meet face to face and do a face to face interview later this week, and I'm just gonna tease it for all of our listeners. Because in the midst of this swirl with Eric's Requiem for Steampunk, Barnes & Noble, Decopunk deserves to be bigger than steampunk, a steampunk celebrity, someone that probably you guys are familiar with, posted that she, even though she's known for steampunk, she cosplays as steampunk, she's really not into steampunk.
Oh, that's awesome.
Her heart, she, and these were her words, her heart is in diesel punk.
Oh, wow.
And should I say her name, or should I just tease it with that?
Let's leave a little tease.
Yeah, you're going to leave them wanting more.
I was about to say the same thing.
Daisy's right.
Yeah, see, I did disappear for a bit, didn't I? Well, I'm not necessarily as deep into the community, and I don't know all the names and circles that you all know, so I sort of, I didn't check out. I was listening, but I don't know all these names and all these circles and all these controversies. I've just been here with my pretend popcorn, just.
Hey, you know what? That's all right. That's all right. You keep us. You keep us a little bit lighthearted and keep us from getting, you know, too worked up over this stuff. But yeah, okay. So I'm just going to leave it at that. So tune in later this week. I'll be posting a supplemental interview with a steampunk cosplay celebrity. And when I say celebrity, when you guys hear who it is, you in the diesel punk and steampunk communities, you will know this person. We're going to talk about her confession for her true love, her true passion, the diesel punk genre.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so that's coming up. And it's just timely, right? It's timely because all of these things are kind of converging. And I actually think for diesel punk, it's all in a good direction.
No, it is. And for me, what I really want to be able to see is a return back to stylish clothing. I've had enough of the cargo shorts, the sneakers, and the T-shirt with the ball cap ensemble. I'm sick of it. I really want people to be able to show up to work on casual Fridays. And I'm going to give a plug to the Gentleman's Emporium. I want people who shop at the Gentleman's Emporium to show up on casual Fridays in their most awesome Edwardian clothes, not costumes, clothes, and just flip the tables and say, listen, this is it. This is who I am. I am very comfortable being transtemporal, meaning crossing time periods. I'm transtemporal, and this is who I am. And
I identify myself as. I identify as. Hey, great argument.
You know, and but the thing is that Johnny, you and I are the same age. You know, I've been wearing fedoras since 1982. In some way, shape, or form, I used to go and I used to raid the Army Navy surplus stores, and I would combine some stuff with the modern, with the Army Navy surplus uniforms, and I did, we, like we said, I didn't even know the term diesel punk back then, but that's what I was. And that's the kind of thing that if steampunk is going to survive, people have got to sort of get in people's faces and say, this is what I'm wearing. What of it?
And do that. I was the same way back then.
We need to support those people who want to bring Edwardian and Victorian era clothing into mm-hmm. the here and now, because those are our people. They're a part of, they're different, they're from a different tribe within the same retrocentric nation. We have to support them.
I love it.
We can't have too much back and forth, you know, fighting between steam and diesel, because like Eric said, we are kind of part of the same larger community.
Mm-hmm.
So we do need to understand and be supportive, because I knew I was diesel my whole life. I just didn't know there was a word for it until I met steampunks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. they told me what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're all in the same boat.
So another thing that I wanted, but didn't Daisy do some research for today's show about some diesel style anime that she wanted to share with us?
I did. And then you fellas went off into the weeds, and I stood on the back porch and went, okay, bye, have fun, come back, I've made cookies and lemonade.
Well, we're back at your doorstep, darling. Hold court with us.
All right. Well, you know, if I get excited about any topic on this show, it's about cartoons. It's about animation. Because I think is what sparked the interest in the diesel era and in diesel punk in me, is growing up watching these cartoons from the 30s and the 40s. I think that's exactly what it was. But I've got some animation history to talk about tonight. 2017 is considered to be the 100-year anniversary of anime.
Wow.
Really? Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes. In 1917, there was a 4-minute cartoon called The Dull Sword that was released, and that is widely believed to have been the first anime. I think there were some made before then, but all of those have been lost, so they're kind of using The Dull Sword as... It's the earliest one they could get, I think is what it is. But here's what's cool. The National Museum of Modern Art in Tokyo has opened a website. They are opened an online exhibit to celebrate early Japanese animation. And on that website, you can stream 64 classic cartoons released in Japan between 1917 and 1941. And most of them have English subtitles. So the language barrier is not going to be, it's not going to be that much of an issue. Now the site, I took a look at it. It is largely in Japanese. Well, I took 8 years of Japanese and I lived over there for 2 years, so it's not a problem for me, but here's how you get around the site. The titles of each video, they've been translated into English. So when you click on a title, it'll take you to a page and you click the big red button, and that's how you get your video. You can't miss it. The big red button.
Can you speak some Japanese?
Oh, gosh, yes, I can. But right off the bat, let's see.
Well, give us instructions to get to the site in Japanese.
Mm.
Did I put you on the spot?
That's what happens.
A little bit on the spot. See, where I live now, I don't get a chance to use it much.
Well, I just think that's the coolest thing ever.
今の住んでいるところは日本語を使う機会があまりありません.
Wow.
I just said in the place where I'm living now, I don't have many opportunities to use Japanese. It's the first thing that popped into my head. Anyway.
I love it.
The website. It is animation.filmarchives.jp/works. And I'll put a link up to it on the Diesel Powered Podcast page after we record tonight. Now, here's the cool thing. A few years back at Anime Blues Con in Memphis, I was on a panel with some of the other members of the Memphis steampunk group, the Clockwork Mechanicalist. And we were talking about how the Western world and Japan inspired each other back and forth. Now, if you look at comics and animation today, you'll see a lot of influence from anime, right? I mean,
especially
the past 10, 15 years. But what modern anime fans may or may not know is that the father of manga, Osamu Tezuka, he's the author of series like Astro Boy, Blackjack, and Kimba the White Lion. He's widely considered to have created the foundations for much of modern manga and anime, but he actually took a lot of influence from American Golden Age animation from the 30s and 40s. So, you know, you kind of have Disney and Fleischer Brothers by way of Japan to thank.
That is awesome.
Interesting.
Yes. I love that. And now, Daisy, you found something, you know, talking about 100 years of anime. Uh-huh. You also found a brand new diesel-flavored anime.
Well, it was thanks to our good boss, Larry. He tipped me off to this. It is a actually a mini-series. I think it's a two-part thing called The Dragon's Dentist. All I know is from what I saw on that trailer you sent me, and I'll put a link to that trailer up too. But it looks to have some diesel flavor in it. If, you know, you see the military uniforms, you see the tanks, and you kind of get both fantasy and sci-fi involved.
Sorry, yeah. Larry. That you're absolutely right. That's it looks to be placed. I couldn't tell if it was set maybe during the it might have been during the Russo-Japanese War, or possibly more like, not to get back, it's way too late to be that. More like the 1920s, some of the aircraft that's used in there, but it definitely looks a lot like a cross between the two. There's one scene near the end, which is a massive World War One type mm-hmm. of a battle scene.
Yeah,
the battleships look straight out of World War One, but at the same time, this fantasy, because the dragon is used like this giant flying dreadnought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was really fun. It's a 2-part. Series. I saw it on NHK World.
Yeah.
And so if you can catch it again, I understand it's award winning. It's a little violent. There mm-hmm. is some pretty graphic death and a little bizarre scenes in a few cases. I was a little surprised NHK was showing it. I thought it was a little mature for what they would have normally shown. But it's a very good anime. I highly recommend it.
I think it was based on a short film that was submitted to an animation festival, and they kind of expanded it.
That sounds right. But it was a very good movie. It was a 2-hour production, broken up into 2 parts. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. Again, there's some war scenes, and there's some people that do die pretty violently in the movie. But it's a very good anime.
All right. Well, speaking of diesel punk and anime, you know, I was into anime for a while. When I was growing up, and then I got out of it for a while, and I'm just recently starting to get back into it. So I was trying to find a list somewhere of anime series that involve series or movies that involve diesel punk, and a few things that I came across were the Studio Ghibli movie Porco Rosso. Has anyone seen that? Because I really want to.
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Yes.
I know of it. I haven't seen it yet.
But I will tell you, as soon as my sons find it, I will become a devotee whether I want to or not.
Yes. it's if you've ever seen a if you've ever seen a poster or a picture somewhere of a pig with a trench coat and glasses and mustache flying a plane, that's him.
You sure? Are you sure that wasn't my yearbook photo?
Hey, maybe they got inspired. And there is also both an anime and a comic based on the German film Metropolis that's out there. Mm-hmm. And yep. Of course, I think one that people mention probably right off the bat would be Full Metal Alchemist, which is one that I've seen. It combines elements of both diesel punk and magic. And another series. Wait, was someone going to say something? I heard a...
No, go ahead.
All right. Another series, which I'm still trying to get my hands on, which also combines diesel punk and magic, is Bacchanal. I did see some of the copies of the novel that the series was based on at Barnes & Noble, but, they were $20 each, and it's the week before a con, so that wasn't happening.
Hey, if you can track it down, Daisy, find an anime called Big O.
The Big O. That was another one. I was looking at the TV tropes page for Diesel Punk to get some inspirations, and they mentioned the Big O as being a Diesel Punk inspiration.
Yeah, it's actually a hard one to find, though, mm-hmm. for a reasonable price, anyway. Mm-hmm. I find it on Blu-ray and DVD for like $40, you know? Mm-hmm. But I can't find it streaming anywhere.
Right. And then there's a few, there's also plenty of historical movies and series out there that show the diesel era from a Japanese perspective. And I always thought that was interesting because... Just like in steampunk, there was the whole discourse about it's not just Victorian England, you know.
Right.
Go look at all these different cultures. So I like to see other cultures' approaches to the same time period. Japanese early Japanese animation for that panel I was talking about. It was on YouTube. It was Momotaro, what was the full name? I forget. Momotaro, he's a famous folk tale in Japan. And they were basically retelling it. And Momotaro and his animal friends in the folk tale go to attack an island full of demons. Do you see where this is going?
I do.
It is the only thing I've ever seen where Pearl Harbor's been depicted as a good and noble thing. And it was kind of mind-blowing. It was really mind-blowing. Because,
wow.
Yeah, you could see the Western influence in the animation, and here they were. And one of the sailors on the ship that gets sunk is a blatant ripoff of Bluto from the Popeye comics. So that stuff was there, you know. We had a cultural influence on them, but they still... You know, it was a wartime cartoon. We had them, they had them.
Yeah.
Well, you know what is really interesting about that, Daisy, and we probably need to start wrapping up here, but what's really interesting about that is the Japanese and the Russians, I think, really shaped the diesel punk aesthetic
more than
any other cultures. You know, we Americans, we kind of adapted it for ourselves. But I mean, in Japan and in Russia, it is like part of the pop culture, you know, common pop culture. And, you know, I think it always has been with Japan, but not called diesel punk. And in Russia, they call it diesel punk. But I think in Japan, it's just... culture, right? It's just part of their aesthetic.
I knew what it was called. I wish I knew what it was called because I know what you're thinking about. I can see the aesthetic in my mind. But
And you know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that you know, even in World War II, you know, before leading up to World War II, the Japanese people and the government in particular had really adopted Western fashion.
Yes.
And
yes.
They were big fans of the Edwardian styles. And when you look at their uniforms, they, you know, really did adopt a lot of that Western styling into their military and their equipment. And I really think that maybe the Japanese, more than anything, kind of set the stage for the mashup that would become Diesel Punk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a good point there.
That's anyway.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know you said we were going to wrap up, but there's one last thing I want to talk about.
Go ahead.
And woe is me, woe is me. I won't be seeing my Johnny this time around, but
I know.
Mid-South Con is this weekend. I'm going to be there with bells on. Well, okay, I won't have bells, but I will have costumes. And I'm going to be doing two panels, the Everyday Cosplay panel on Friday at 8 and the Cos Positivity panel on Saturday at 3. And I'll also see if I can't record a live episode while I'm there, if I can stave off the gremlins, because they seem to like me.
You know
that
what?
Will be great.
You know.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Daisy. I wrote an article for another publication about how to do a specific cosplay every day. And I would be honored if you would mention the article. I'll actually send you a link first thing,
yes, please,
when I can. So, because the thing is that there are ways of sneaking cosplay into your everyday wardrobe. And I'd like to see a lot more people do that, especially Diesel Punks or Deco Punks. What are we calling ourselves tonight? I don't remember.
Oh, we're having an identity crisis.
Well, I am going to miss seeing you, Daisy.
Yeah,
this will be
the
first time in 4 years that I've not made it to Mid-South Con, but it's for a good reason that I'm not going.
Can I tell them when it is?
Yeah, please do.
Mid-South Con is this weekend, March 24th through 26th at the Memphis Hilton, and you can get more info at midsouthcon.org. Take it away, Johnny.
Excellent. And by the way, I'm so super proud of you. And, you know, when we first met, you were still kind of just trying to figure out the whole con scene, and now you're hosting panels. That I can't tell you how proud I am of you. I think it's awesome. But I'm not going to be there because I'm doing my live show at a theater here in Nashville on the 25th, my Tales from the Flip Side on stage. And it's magic and music inspired by my book series, Tales from the Flip Side. I'll be joined by a great traditional, speaking of Russian diesel punk, a great traditional theatrical Russian clown troupe called the Kalishnikov Clowns. And that they do traditional, and it was really came into vogue in the diesel era.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing that while you're at Mid-South Con. So I'm not going to be able to be there. But speaking of my book series, Tales from the Flip Side, if there are any diesel, punk, deco, style, pulp authors in our audience listening, my publisher just put out the announcement this week for submissions for the first anthology volume of the series. The title of the next edition is Advance the Spark, The Further Tales from the Flip Side. And I love that title, Advance the Spark. And they are looking for authors to play in my diesel punk pulp world. And so if you are an author out there and you want the full details, you can go to Pro Se Press, their Facebook page, their website, or just email me. I'll send you the submission guidelines. Don't send me your submissions. They have to go through the publisher. Now, here's the dirty little secret. I get to be the final editor on everything. I got the final say, you know, 'cause it's my world. I am God in my world. So, That's the cool thing. But if you're out there and you're an aspiring author, or if you're an established author, I'm looking at you, Bard Constantine. I'm looking at you, Dan Glasser. I'm looking at you, Larry Amiette. And if you would like to contribute a short story, 5,000 words, at least 5,000 words for the new anthology, you know, playing with Big Daddy Cool's characters, the Bombshell Kittens, we would love to have you do that. Well, hey, guys, before we sign off, anything else tonight? We covered a lot in this last hour.
Well, I am going to interject here that I finally got a copy of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. If you are a diesel punk or a diesel punker, depending on what you call yourself, this is one of those movies where it's like you really do have to watch it. When I was watching the Harry Potter movies, I was like, oh, you know what? Too bad this like couldn't happen in the 30s and 40s. Well, I got my wish. It is one of those movies where it's like if you love diesel punk and you love fantasy and you love the Harry Potter movies, you are doing yourself a disservice if you don't at least catch this once. And I'm also working on something special for John's publication. At least I think it's special. It's special to me.
I'm excited. We can't blow the lid off of it yet, but you guys will be excited with the final product, I think. Well, yeah, and I got to agree with you. Fantastic Beasts, great diesel punk movie in the deco era styling. It's deco flavored diesel punk. Ooh, did I just coin a new catchphrase?
I think you did.
That's my favorite.
I think awesome. I think that's my the drop. Labor. That's the drop right there.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, it's after 10 o'clock, guys, and Larry's pumpkin is about to roll out of town.
That's right.
Well, mine is too. 5 a.m. comes awfully early in the morning.
I hear you, man.
These glass slippers ain't doing me no favors.
So we're going to go ahead and sign out. Larry, any last words as we close out?
No. As we're recording this, it's springtime. First day of spring. Remember, we're getting to warm weather. It promises to be a hot one. We've already broke a record today for the first day of spring here in the North Texas area for heat. So make sure you check on each other and take good care of each other, because that's what life is all about.
Outstanding, Daisy.
Well, I hope to see some of you this weekend at Mid-South Con, and if I don't, I hope that you'll be able to catch me on anything evidence I happen to be able to gather while I'm there. She says mysteriously.
Evidence. Now I'm curious. Mr. Fisk.
All I can tell you guys is that whatever you do this weekend between now and the next show, just remember to keep your chins up and your fedoras on.
Outstanding. And I'll add to that. Until the next time, guys, if you like the show, tell 200-300 of your closest friends and family. And remember to swing hard, swing often. We'll catch you on the flip side.